The evening air in the South Carolina low country was thick with the weight of an approaching storm and the oppressive humidity of early June. The stillness of the rural landscape was shattered only by the distant, rhythmic chirping of cicadas and the low, restless whining of dogs within their enclosures. On this isolated patch of land, where the dark soil of the hunting estate met the edge of the Salcahatchie River, the atmosphere felt charged with an unspoken tension that preceded a profound and violent shift. The property, known for its sprawling acreage and the prestige of the family that claimed it, sat in a silence that was anything but peaceful. It was a place where generations of legal authority had been solidified. Yet on this particular night, the authority of the law felt miles away from the shadows stretching across the kennels. The gravel road leading to the feed room remained undisturbed by any vehicle until the flashing lights of a patrol car finally cut through the darkness. Even then, the first responders were met with a scene that defied the typical quietude of the region. There, in the dim light cast by the utility lamps, the reality of the situation began to settle into the damp earth. The two figures lay motionless against the backdrop of the rural evening, their presence marking the end of a legacy. This was the moment the world first learned of the deaths of Margaret and Paul. I arrived at the scene long after the initial chaos had subsided, but the remnants of that night were etched into every official report I handled. The chronological reconstruction of the events leading to the murders began early on that Monday, June 7, 2021. Throughout the afternoon, the family patriarch maintained his usual schedule, moving between his law firm and his family estate. Digital records show a flurry of activity as the evening progressed, beginning with a dinner that appeared routine to any outside observer. At approximately 8:44 p.m., the victims were confirmed to be at the dog kennels on the property. My review of the telemetry data from the family's vehicles indicated a series of movements that did not initially align with the statements provided by the suspect. He claimed to have been napping at the main house while his wife and son were at the kennels. Yet the step counter on his mobile device showed a burst of activity during the exact window he claimed to be asleep. Between 9:04 p.m. and 9:06 p.m., his SUV was recorded leaving the property and traveling toward his mother's residence in Almeida. He drove at speeds significantly higher than his historical average for that specific route, reaching nearly 80 miles per hour on the dark, winding roads. He spent a mere 20 minutes at the Almeida residence before turning back toward the estate. The return trip was equally hurried. Upon his arrival back at the kennels at 10:05 p.m., he placed a 911 call less than 20 seconds after his vehicle came to a stop. This narrow window for discovery raised immediate questions about the feasibility of his narrative. The timeline I reconstructed left no room for the casual discovery he described to the dispatchers. The most critical turning point in this investigation centered on a piece of digital evidence that remained locked behind a passcode for nearly a year. This evidence was a video file found on the younger victim's phone, recorded at 8:44 p.m. at the dog kennels. In the recording, the victim was attempting to film a friend's dog to document an injury to its tail. The video was brief and seemingly mundane, capturing the chaotic energy of the kennels and the sound of the wind. However, the background audio contained the distinct voices of three individuals. Forensic audio experts and close family associates identified the voices as belonging to the mother, the son, and the father. This placed the suspect at the exact location of the murders, just minutes before the forensic window for the killings began. For months, the suspect had maintained a firm alibi that he had not visited the kennels at all that evening. The existence of this recording stripped that alibi away, forcing a late trial admission of his presence at the scene. Further forensic examination of the mobile devices belonging to the victims revealed that both phones were locked for the final time at 8:49 p.m., suggesting the assault occurred almost immediately after the video was recorded. This digital trail was supplemented by ballistics evidence found throughout the estate. Investigators recovered shell casings near the feed room that matched ammunition stored inside the main house, specifically 300 blackout cartridges used in the rifle that killed the mother were identical to boxes found in the family's gun room. No outside weapons were ever identified, and the murder weapons themselves were never recovered. despite extensive searches of the river and the surrounding woods. The judicial process culminated in a 6-week trial in Walterboro, South Carolina. Beginning in early 2023, the prosecution presented a case built on the foundation of the digital timeline and the sudden collapse of the suspect's alibi. On March 2, 2023, after a deliberation period that lasted less than 3 hours, the jury returned a unanimous verdict of guilty on all counts, including 2 counts of murder and 2 counts of possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime. The sentencing took place the following day. The presiding judge, citing the overwhelming nature of the evidence and the calculated betrayal of the family bond, sentenced the defendant to 2 consecutive life terms in the South Carolina Department of Corrections without the possibility of parole. During the sentencing hearing, the judge noted the stark contrast between the defendant's professional standing as a lawyer and the gravity of the crimes committed. The defendant was also subsequently sentenced in federal court to 40 years for a series of financial crimes discovered during the murder investigation, including wire fraud and money laundering. These financial schemes involved the misappropriation of millions of dollars from clients and his own law firm over a period of several years. All appeals regarding the murder convictions have focused on the admissibility of the financial evidence. Yet the core of the state's case remained the digital evidence found at the kennels. The case concluded with the total dismantling of a legal dynasty that had controlled the region for over a century. The defendant remains incarcerated in a maximum security facility, serving a sentence that ensures he will never return to the estate where the investigation began.